Okay. So I wanted to dedicate this this last shiur to the memory of my father, Norman Rosenfeld, Nachas Shmuel ben Yosef Chaim, whose yard site is tonight. I pass these for the other side, which is also why, if there is a minyan by the end, the people of men and whatever women want to stay for Maariv, I would love if we were able to make a minyan at the end. But can't tell if that looks likely. We'll see. Okay. One brief anecdote that I just wanted to give, as some people might find it sacrilegious or irreverent for me to dedicate a shiur on this topic tonight, masturbation, to the memory of my father. My father was sick for about 2 years, and during the period when he was weaker, guests would come and visit him in our house. My doctorate would always sit on the coffee table in my parents' house, and I remember my father telling me with pride how he would specifically open it up and pass it to some of the more right-wing rebbeim who would come and visit him, just to, you know, get a kick out of seeing their reaction to looking at the table of contents. One of the chapters in my doctorate was about masturbation. He was always tremendously supportive and proud of my work. In the field of Judaism and sexuality, even though he used to joke that he had always hoped that I would change my name when I got married, and then I didn't. So I dedicate our learning to his memory tonight. Please make a bracha or two, whatever you do with a krembo, in his memory, either inside or take it with you as you leave. Okay, so our topic tonight is masturbation. It's a topic which is spoken about a lot and spoken about very severely in many yeshiva high schools, specifically towards men. And it's a topic which is also a tremendous source of guilt, I think, there in both women and men, though for different reasons. Most of the shiur tonight is going to deal with the halachic issues for men, because the halachic issue, or the primary halachic issue, is that of hotzat zera levatela, of wasting semen. And it's that on which most of the sources deal with. But we will, at the end, deal with the topic of female masturbation, which there are just far fewer sources for, and the issue is different. And then, hopefully, we'll have a few minutes at the end to sum up from tonight and from in general. Okay, so let's jump right in to the sources. We're going to start this week with a psukim, looking at the biblical roots of the prohibition, or are there any biblical roots to the prohibition? What is there in the Bible that is relevant? And it's really, yeah.
I wanted to know, in halakha, are there things that are on the books, but they're not really important? Like, there are things that are determined, legislated, but in the hierarchy of things, nobody pays attention to them?
Right. So the thing is, in halakha, I would say yes. There are certainly things that are written on the books that no one pays attention to. But how it gets determined which things people do pay attention to and which things they don't, and which things kind of become a bigger deal than they halachically should be, is kind of bound up with cultural factors. So there's definitely, if you open up the Shulchan Aruch, let's say the classic code of Jewish law, you'll see a lot of things in there that we just disregard. I mean, one classic example is just the way the Shulchan Aruch starts, Yitgaber ka'ri la'amod ba'boker. Right, a person is supposed to jump out of bed with the strength of a lion to get up and worship God. You know, how many of us, you know, press the snooze button or whatever? No one criticizes them as violating the Shulchan Aruch, because it's just not one of those things that's stressed. But for sure, there are many other things like that. Okay, so we'll start with the psukim. And there should be more lying around somewhere. I'm just not sure where.
Do we need more?
Do we need more source sheets? They're there. Okay, so send them over to this side, please. Okay. So we're going to start with the psukim, in Breishit Perek Lamed Chet, the story of Yehuda's sons, okay, which is kind of the classic story in the Torah that refers, or that either refers or does not refer to masturbation. Okay, Vayikach Yehuda Isha Le'er Bechoro Ushma Tamar. I mean, the story begins with Yehuda himself getting married, having three sons, Er, Onan, and Shelah. And now we see Yehuda takes a wife for his oldest son, whose name is Tamar. Vayihi Er Bechor Yehuda Ra Beinei Hashem Vayimiteu Hashem. And Er was bad in the eyes of God, and so God killed him. Okay, at this point, we don't know what that means or what was this badness. Vayomer Yehuda le'onan bo el eshet achicha v'yabemota v'akim zera le'achicha. So Yehuda goes to his next son and tells him about the mitzvah of Yibum, which is if a man dies without leaving any children behind him, his wife is supposed to marry one of his brothers to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum and to kind of give a child that will continue the name of the dead husband. Okay? Vayeda onan kilo lo yeh hazara vaya imba el eshet achiv v'shichet arta levilti neton zera le'achiv. So since Onan knew that the child wouldn't really be his, the child was going to be for the memory of his dead brother, Er, when he would have sex with Tamar, he would ejaculate on the ground so as not to have her become pregnant and so as not to ensure the memory of his dead brother. And then this parshia ends by just saying, Vayera beinei Hashem asher asa vayamet gam oto. And it was evil in God's eyes what he had done, and God killed him too. Okay, so there's that word gam also, which is what leads the commentaries to say that it must be that the same sin that he did was the sin that Er had done also. Okay, also because both of them are called Ra Beinei Hashem, it links what they've each done, and so we say that was the sin. And this is, I guess, the closest that we get in the Torah for hearing about masturbation at all, even though it's quite clear that what's happening here is something different. Right? Okay, in other words, what's happening here is specifically coitus interruptus, the technical term, but the way that I would define it, and we'll see a bit more about this later, is it's specifically masturbation in the context of marriage as a way of avoiding procreation. Okay, here it's even more specific than that, specifically a way of avoiding the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, but we could see it as perhaps trying to avoid procreation in general. Once we go back and ask, well, what was Er doing, right? Why was Er not ejaculating into his wife, but instead on the ground? The Gemara will tell us why. But the point is that it seems to be a specific kind of running away from procreation.
Just to clarify.
Yeah.
So, did Onan take Tamar as a wife, or is the Tanakh saying that because they were in sexual relations, like the Av was taking her as a wife?
So, with the Yivama, in a case of Yibum, there is a connection that exists from the moment that the husband dies without children between the wife, his widow, and the brothers. And the marriage between them is completed by having sex. In other words, there isn't a traditional marriage ceremony that you normally have. That's what happens in the case of Yibum. And that once he has sex with her one time, they're considered a regular married couple. In most ways, okay. Though what's interesting is she doesn't have a specific ketubah. She doesn't have a marriage settlement with the second husband. It's as if it's like a continuation of the first marriage. And if the second husband dies, she gets her marriage settlement from the first husband.
Even though in the Tanakh, the eye is used. I mean, it doesn't talk about ketubah in marriage.
Right. Right. That's true. That's true in the Tanakh, but I'm saying even after the Tanakh, specifically in the case of Yibum, there isn't any marriage. There is just that first sexual act that affects the marriage.
So I'm just wondering if him not completing the sexual act was basically him not taking her as a yibama, that's the term, and that could be why he died. Almost as if, with Megillat Ruth, they call Ploni Almoni, the guy who had a chance to do the Yigalotav,
and he didn't.
And he didn't.
Right. Well, what I would say is this, and it's something that we saw a couple of weeks ago, which applies to at what point does a person consider to have had sexual intercourse with someone, and it's at the point of what's called hara. This was in the Rambam. Actually, you know what? I think that we might not have seen this Rambam inside. It could be that I mentioned it outside, but it's in the Rambam in Hilchot Issurei Biyah that he says that the point at which hara happens, which is the partial penetration, that's already considered to be sexual intercourse for the purposes of karet, the punishment of karet, and it's also considered for the purposes of yibum. So in other words, even though he didn't actually do what he should have done, I wouldn't say that he didn't marry her at all. In other words, yibum was being performed on some level. Okay? This is the story. I want to just make mention of two other sources in the Torah where semen is mentioned. Neither of them are in a necessarily sinful context, but I just want to mention them. One of them is in Leviticus chapter 15, verses 16 to 18, where it simply talks about tum'at bal keri. If a man has a seminal emission in any context, it creates a light form of impurity in which he needs to immerse in water and then will become pure. And that's something where even in the context of a sexual relationship, both the husband and the wife get this type of impurity. I mean, today we don't take notice of it, but in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when we're talking about eating korbanot or eating being tahor for the purposes of kachim, of eating sacrifices also, there it was relevant, and this was considered a light form of impurity that they would simply need to wait until the following evening, immerse, and then they would be fine. Okay? So that's just one thing to mention, but again, the impurity there doesn't imply that anything wrong is being done. It's just a status, just like menstrual impurity happens to women all the time. It doesn't imply any fault or any sin. Okay? The other place is a little bit more interesting, and that's in Dvarim, Perek Chaf Gimel, Psukim Yud to Tet Vav. I didn't put these Psukim here. I'm just mentioning them in passing. Chapter 23 of Dvarim. It's a story of war and a story about the camp. And it says that if there is a man in the, army camp who has a nocturnal emission, then he has to leave the camp until the next evening when he immerses, and then he can come back into the camp. Okay? Now, the reason that I'm mentioning those psukim, okay, again there, it doesn't necessarily have to have a bad connotation, but there I think it's a little bit more questionable because the psukim start out by saying v'nishmarta mikol davar ra, that you should stay away from anything bad, and then we hear about this mikrei laila, the nocturnal emission, and so then the question can emerge, well, is this something positive or negative? And we also hear in that same context about needing to cover up when you use the bathroom at war. So again, it's that context is less clear. Okay, those are the main biblical sources. I just included the one about Aaron Onan because that's the one that most specifically links the wasting of seed to sin. Okay, or to a sinful category. Okay, and the next thing that we're going to look at is a Gemara in Nida. It's a very long Gemara. I only translated part of it because I didn't think that we would get to read the entire thing inside. I'll walk us through the beginning so that we can reach the question with a little bit of background, okay? The first thing that we see is a Mishnah, okay? The Mishnah teaches, Kol hayad hamarbe livdok benashim mishubachat ubeanashim tikatzeitz. Any hand that frequently checks, okay? And the question is, what are we checking for, okay? For a woman, it's checking to see if she is in nida, if she's menstruating. If a woman is checking herself to see if she's bleeding, that's considered something praiseworthy. But if a man is checking himself to see if he has experienced an impurity of zov, which is a type of emission that usually indicates an illness, but he too is checking himself to see if he's pure or impure, that's considered a negative thing. Okay, the woman who checks herself is praised, and with the man, we say that his hand that checks himself should be chopped off. Okay? So the Gemara talks about what's the reason for that, okay? And I'll just read the first line because it's something that we'll come back to at the very end when talking about female masturbation. The Gemara asks, what's the difference between men and women? And the Gemara says, Nashim lav bnot hargashaninhu mishubachot, anashim dibnei hargashaninhu tikatzeitz. Okay? Women, and there's a debate in the Rishonim how to interpret this line, but I'll interpret it literally first. Women who don't experience any feeling when they're checking themselves should be praised, but men who do experience some type of sensation should have their hand chopped off, okay? Now, it's not clear that that's for sure what this line means, okay? The line can also mean perhaps women where there's no prohibition on having whatever the sensation is are being praised, whereas men where there is a prohibition involved should have their hand chopped off, okay? This leads the Gemara into a discussion over a man checking himself to see if he has experienced impurity and how it is that if he wants to check himself, he should check himself. Okay? If we put ourselves also in the mindset of, let's say, someone who's checking himself before eating or for the purposes of eating a korban, a sacrifice, and so he really wants to make sure that he is pure and that he hasn't experienced some sort of impurity, the question is, how does he check himself? And the Gemara gets into an extended discussion of he should check himself while using a cloth, okay? And should he use a thin cloth or a thick cloth? It could be with a thin cloth. He'll still feel his hand there, and that will create some sort of negative result. We'll talk about what the negative result is in a few minutes. So maybe he needs to use a very thick cloth where he won't have any sensation at all. Okay? So the Gemara discusses that at some length and then switches direction slightly, but not much, and talks about the fact that anyone who holds their penis while using the bathroom is going to cause a flood in the world. Okay? And then discusses a very serious problem that comes up, which is not something to be laughed about, and not being a man, I really can't say whether this happens or not, but apparently, if a man would try to use the bathroom without touching himself, then it could be that some of the urine would splatter on his legs. If the urine splattered on his legs, people would think that he is a krut shafra, that he has some type of a genital deformity, and they would suspect that his kids are not really his kids, and that maybe his wife was in an adulterous relationship and his kids are mamzerim. So the question is, you know, is that a reason enough for a person to be able to touch their penis while urinating or not? And the Gemara seems to think that it isn't, that there are ways around it. A person can stand and urinate off of a high place so that no urine should fall on his legs. Or he can urinate into soft earth. So again, so that the urine would not rebound from the ground and wet his leg. That's the discussion that the Gemara gets into, and eventually the Gemara even says, and you know what, if he can't do any of those things, it's actually still better that people suspect that he does have this deformity and that his children are mamzerim, but that he not make himself evil for even 1 second in front of God. Okay, so even though the consequences of him not touching himself while using the bathroom might be grave, there's still something worse on the other side. Okay, now I'm going into this whole lengthy discourse that the Gemara goes into, which is probably TMI, but the Gemara says that also. The Gemara says, V'kol kach lama. Okay, what's the big deal? What is it that we're afraid of? What is this all about? And that's where we finally hear, what is this fear? Okay, right, why should the man's hand be chopped off? Why do we, you know, why is it better that his sons be even considered mamzerim? The issue is, mipnei shemotzi shichvat zera levatala. Because the concern is that he might come to wastefully emit seed. De'amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol hamotzi shichvat zera levatala chayav mita. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan says that anyone who wastefully emits seed is liable to the death penalty, as it says in Breishit, Vayira b'nei Hashem asher asa, Vayamet gam oto. Okay, we see, okay, what Onan did, which is that he wasted semen, and we see that his punishment was death. Therefore, anyone who wastes semen is punishable by death. Okay? Rabbi Yitzchak v'Rabbi Ami Amre, ki'ilu shofech damim. Okay, so Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Ami say it from a slightly different angle, which is not that he's liable to the death penalty. I mean, he would be also, but it's also as if he is killing someone. Okay, as it says, hanechamim ba'alim tachat kol etz ra'anan shochate hayiladim banechalim tachat sifei aslaim. It talks about people who are becoming aroused under these trees, and it says that they are like people who are slaughtering children. Okay, and the Gemara says, al tikre shochte ela sochte. Okay, it's not that they're literally slaughtering the children, or it's that through a certain squeezing, this wastefully emitting of semen, that is like the slaughtering of children. Okay, with here it being, I guess, the potential children that are being slaughtered through this action. Okay, and then the last thing that we hear is Rav Asi Amar, ki'ilu oved avodat kochavim. Okay, that the person who wastefully emits semen is as if worshipping idols, because ketiv hacha tachat kol etz ra'anan uktiv hatam al haharim haramim v'tachat kol etz ra'anan. Okay, here it uses the words under every tree in the pasuk that we just quoted, that was talking about wasting semen, and we have another pasuk which talks explicitly about avodah zarah, and says that Avodah Zarah would be worshipped under every tree. Okay, tachat kol etz ra'anan. So there's an equation being made between those two actions. Okay, so to recap what's happened, we have not seen so much in the psukim, in the Torah. Suddenly we get to this Gemara, and we have a series of very severe statements, okay, which compare the person who is wasting semen to someone who is a murderer, to someone who is an idolater, and also to someone who is liable to the death penalty. Okay? And it's not totally clear where this rhetoric is coming from. But what I want to say at this point are two things, okay? The first thing is, if we look at what's actually being said, okay, and we look at the psukim being brought, this is not the usual way that the Gemara will bring something when it's making a serious halachic statement, okay? Sometimes the Gemara will make a statement that's more of a rhetorical statement than a halachic statement. It's more of a homiletical statement, a statement for a sermon, than a concrete halachic statement. There are a lot of things in the Gemara where the Gemara will say, giving this shiur here in Israel, it doesn't have the same weight, but let's say teaching this in New York and saying to people, it also says that the person who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael is like someone who has no God or like someone who worships idolatry. And yet, right, there's an entire community in the diaspora that's not actually, that we don't actually view as idolaters, because we realize that the Gemara is making a statement that there's a value to living in Eretz Yisrael, and it's not literally trying to equate someone who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael as an actual idolater. It's making that statement to say, you know, it's a great thing to live in Eretz Yisrael. And what I would say here is that I think that the Gemara is using the Pesukim in the same way as saying, this is something that's really negative, but is it actually on the level of deserving the death penalty? I don't think so, because even if we look at the pasuk that gets quoted, right, it quotes the pasuk where it shows that Onan dies. But normally, right, if you want to say that something is actually going to make you liable to the death penalty, you need a different type of pasuk, a different type of verse in the Torah, where you actually have a clear warning that says, do not do the following thing. In other words, we don't usually learn from a story, okay, that this is a biblical prohibition. And it would seem that what's happening here, because of the psukim that are being used and the way that they're being used, is that we aren't necessarily talking about a concrete halachic obligation as much as this is something that we view very negatively, and there's a strong rhetoric that's being used. Yeah?
I just want to point out, if you do a comparative search of Rabbi Yochanan Chayav Mital, you'll come up with statements like, whoever has a atomic chacham has a stain on his garment is Chayav Mital.
Right, right.
Just do Rabbi Yochanan Chayav Mital, and it'll come up with many, much hyperbole.
Right.
If you put it in context, you realize it's
right. rhetoric. Right. Okay, so that's a great example, even less than at the level of, you know, living in the diaspora, just having a stain on your garment. And there are a lot of those other examples where we see these aren't things where we're going to someone and saying, I have to say, after learning that Gemara, it was like, for days, weeks, I'm like, you know, paranoid lawyers, so I'll make sure that I don't have a stain on my garment. But it isn't one of those things that one is actually going to be killed for. The Gemara goes on, okay, and brings in another aspect. And this is an aspect that we're not really going to talk about so much tonight, but I want to bring it up because it's another avenue to explore, and it's definitely worth exploring, which is the next statement. Rav says, Hamakshat smoladat yehei b'nidui. Okay, a person who consciously does something to bring on an erection upon himself should be excommunicated. Okay, and the Gemara says, right, why do we say he should be excommunicated? Velema asur, we should just say it's prohibited. Okay, and the Gemara answers, dekamigare yetzer hara anafshe, that he is kind of inviting the evil inclination upon himself, or he's bringing out his evil inclination. Okay? And I think that what comes up here, and the Gemara then goes on to also talk about the concept of hirhur, of having sexual thoughts, and says anyone who incites himself to have sexual thoughts is not going to, you know, is not going to be welcome into God's house. That really brings up a whole separate issue, which is not the technical issue of masturbation or of wasting semen, but the issue of where is one's mind and what thoughts are okay and not okay. So the concept, that halachic category of hirhur, of inappropriate sexual thoughts, is a totally separate category that really needs to be kind of judged on its own grounds. And in the future, I maybe do, you know, an additional shiur just on that. But I want to point out that that's something that we're not going to be covering, but that definitely should be looked at as well. The last thing that we're going to look at in this Gemara is a statement of Rabbi Elazar, which is again translated, Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, Ma'i dichtiv yideichem damim maleyu, elu hamina'afim biyad. Rabbi Elazar says, what does it mean? And he quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu that your hands are filled with blood. This refers to people who commit adultery with their hand. Okay? Tana debate Rabbi Yishmael, lo tinaf, lo tehe bechan li'uf, bein biyad, bein beregel. The house of Rabbi Yishmael, they learned, lo tinaf, do not commit adultery. You should not have any adultery going on, whether it is by hand or by foot. Okay? Now, I'm interpreting it at this point literally. This section of the Gemara is considered specifically to be referring to masturbation, okay, because of the reference to the hand and the foot. The foot is more complicated, but it is considered to be a reference to masturbation, okay? And whereas, until this point, okay, we haven't actually heard about the act of masturbation. We've simply heard about the state of wasting semen, and there hasn't been any distinction made between how is that semen being wasted, in what context. This is the source, the only source that can really be said to be referring to the act of masturbation. Okay? Now, I want to point out that this source is also not that simple, okay? Again, the meaning, okay, the use of the word, that's fine. The use of the category of ni'uf, which is adultery, okay, what does it actually mean to commit adultery with one's hand? And what does it mean by hand or by foot? So I don't want to get into the issue of technique here, but it's definitely a question. It's a question raised by the Rishonim also, which is, how is masturbation done by foot? Is that a realistic action that can happen?
Sorry, doesn't just mean to walk to someone that you're going to have a sexual affair with?
So that's an interesting interpretation. But that's based on the context of the whole sugya. That's not how it gets interpreted. There's the context of the sugya, and there's also the context of the statement right before it. Those that commit adultery with their hands.
Right. But it seems to me that that would actually flow beautifully, because we do know that adultery means do not go to someone and have an adulterous affair. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me a logical thing that the Gemara would say. Actually, adultery is saying whether you do it for yourself, by yourself, or whether you go to someone else to
Okay. Complete. Okay, it's an interesting interpretation. I wanna just make reference briefly to something in Reb Tzadok HaKohen Milublin. Reb Tzadok was a Hasidic thinker who lived in the mid to late 19th century, wrote many amazing sfarim. Among them, Tzidkat HaTzadik is his most famous. I'm sure that it's here somewhere in this Beit Midrash. But I want to just refer you to a passage in Takanat HaShavin, which is another sefer of Reb Tzadok, and his entire Torah, Tetvav, it is the last section of Takanat HaShavin, deals with the issue of masturbation and Reb Tzadok's rereading traditional sources. And one of the sources that he rereads is our Gemara in Nida, Daf Yud Gimel, and he tries to explain away this statement to say that this doesn't necessarily refer to masturbation, and he has a reinterpretation of it. So I point people there if you're interested in seeing it be reinterpreted. And also just want to make reference to that Torah of Reb Tzadok, which we're not going to look at tonight, because I really did want to just focus on kind of learning together basic halachic sources. and not kind of move into the out of the halachic realm. But Reb Tzadok, Takanat HaShavin, Torah 15, rereads really almost all of the sources that we're going to read tonight that would speak negatively about masturbation, and he finds a way to show, if the source made it seem like it was a biblical prohibition, really it's just rabbinic. If the source made it seem rabbinic, really it's not even that. And he has a very creative reading of this passage here, and of the hand and the foot. Okay? So this is the main source in the Gemara. I brought one more source in the Gemara that I thought that we would look at just briefly, which is a Gemara in Yevamot Daf Lamed Daled Amud Bet, where the Gemara asks the question, it's kind of the question behind the text is, what was the sin of Er and Onan? Okay? And it's here that the Gemara says what they were actually doing. We're not going to read this source inside because there are a lot of sources to read, and I want us to move forward and get to some of the later ones. I'll give you the punchline from this source, which is that the Gemara says that what Er and Onan were doing was having anal sex with Tamar, okay? And even within that anal sex, it seems that they were not ejaculating into her, okay? Which is odd, because at that point, there wasn't necessarily, or at that point how things were viewed, there wouldn't necessarily have been an additional aspect of birth control necessary. In other words, once they were having anal sex with her, now she could have, technically she could have gotten pregnant, but I guess for that reason, they were kind of doing both of those things. A, having anal sex, and B, even within the anal sex, not ejaculating into her, okay? And what's interesting here, and the reason that I brought this Gemara is that really there's no one who says that what Er and Onan were doing was today what we think about when we say masturbation, okay? They were doing some sort of act to prevent Tamar from getting pregnant, okay? Whether it was coitus interruptus, whether it was coitus interruptus of anal sex, it really wasn't masturbation, what they were doing, okay? And I think that that's important, because if we view the biblical source as somehow shedding light on what's the meaning of this act, or what is it that's actually prohibited, it's interesting to see that in the biblical context, it's not masturbation at all. One other interesting point in this Gemara is that there's a Tosfot here that gets into the questions of marital sex and what are the limits of what's allowed in marital sex, and are the actions that Er and Onan were doing allowed? How do we explain that these things are allowed between a married couple? And there's a couple of different ways that the Re explains that. So for anyone, I guess, coming from the other side of the picture, it's a very interesting Tosfot to look at also. Yeah. No. You know what? And the truth is, I've been taking the Talmudic translations from the Sansino.